So today we will be studying the Dhammapada verses 266 and 267. And the verses go: Natena so bhikkhu hoti yavata bhikkhate pare visang dhammang samadaya bhikkhu hoti na tavata. One is not a bhikkhu. One is not called a bhikkhu just to the extent that one goes for bhikkha or alms. If one still practices wrong dhamma, one cannot be a bhikkhu just to that extent. Yoda punyancha papancha bahetva brahmacharyava Sankhaya loke charati satve bhikkhuti uchati. Whoever here, having expelled both good and evil, lives the holy life and fares in this world with discernment, such a person is called a bhikkhu. So these verses were spoken in response to a story of a certain Brahmana. In the time of Buddha, there was this group of people, the Brahmanas. They were the high society, high class people who ruled the religion, the ceremonies of the time. And many of them would leave home when they got old. It became a part of their culture to leave home and to go and live in the forest when they got old. And so this Brahmana, he heard that the Buddha called his monks bhikkhu, and bhikkhu comes from the word bhikkha. Bhikkha means alms, or food that is put in an alms bowl. And so he thought to himself, well, he had left the home life and he was living in the forest, and he would go into the village with his bowl for alms. And he said, well, I go for alms, I should be called a bhikkhu. And so he went to the Buddha and he said, Buddha, Venerable Gotama, I hear you call your followers bhikkhus. So I think you should call me a bhikkhu as well, right? Am I not a bhikkhu? I also go for alms. And the Buddha said, oh, no, you misunderstood. And then he taught this verse. So it's a very short story, simple story, but the meaning behind the story, I mean, gives us a good example of individuals who, or how the mind can, in general, cling on to externalities and superficial understanding of things, ideas of religion. The idea that just because someone goes for alms, one is a religious person. Just because one has left the home life, one is a religious person. So the word bhikkhu, though it does come from the word bhikkha, it's the same as any word. It's like how the word doctor comes from the idea of doctoring. But to be a doctor, you need to have either A, certification, or B, knowledge and qualification. And hopefully of both. And so to be a bhikkhu, the Buddha, though he used this word and he took the word from the idea of alms round, it's much more of a symbolic meaning than the actual meaning. Of course, a bhikkhu is something much higher, much more specific, much more meaningful than just someone who goes on alms. But you see this, people who think of themselves as meditators just because they sit still or contemplate or think a lot, people who pray and think that's meditation, and it's fine. I mean, they can call themselves that, but it's not what we mean when we say meditation. And so some people will think of themselves as a monk, or think that they're living like a monk just because they live in quietude, or they live alone, or they live simply, and that's fine. Of course, they can use whatever words they want, but it's not what we mean when we say monk. This isn't what we mean when we say bhikkhu. So this is something valuable. It's a valuable reminder for us to focus on the specifics. There's Just focus on the more underlying meaning behind things. The word bhikkhu, in Buddhism there are two kinds of bhikkhu. Bhikkhu, there is the Vinaya bhikkhu. So this word is what the Buddha used to refer to monks. What we say in English as a monk, the Buddha used the word bhikkhu. Bhikkhu means someone who has undertaken the rules of training and more specifically has undergone a acceptance, official action, where the monastic community gathers together and makes a proclamation and asks for agreement and checks the, it's quite an involved process, checks the individual to make sure they're suitable, and if anyone disagrees they speak up, but if no one disagrees then after a lengthy confirmation then the person is considered a bhikkhu. And there, of course, there are qualities that are required. If it's a male you can be a bhikkhu, if it's a female you're called a bhikkhuni, the idea is the same, but you have to have these qualifications. And so this is called a Vinaya bhikkhu. After becoming a Vinaya bhikkhu you have to keep lots and lots of rules. And so the first way in which this Brahmana misunderstood the word bhikkhu is in terms of what is required to actually be considered a bhikkhu in terms of qualification, in terms of certification. So if someone is going to be a Vinaya bhikkhu, well, they have to not only wear robes and have a bowl and go on alms, but they have to keep all these many rules. And the idea is that there are many things that are required of a Buddhist, of a person who is dedicating their life to Buddhism, beyond simply, for example, going for alms. Monks have to have a very strict code of behavior, and the way that they go on alms has to be strict. The focus is on the idea of visang dhamma, wrong dhamma, so dhamma like stealing and cheating and manipulating. Of course, a person can go begging for alms and ask for this or ask for that. A person can hoard food and seek out food specifically for their to satisfy their desires and so on. This is the sorts of things that a bhikkhu, the training for a bhikkhu, are meant to avoid. Of course, the more important and the more meaningful meaning of the word bhikkhu is a sutta bhikkhu. So Vinaya bhikkhu means a bhikkhu according to the rules of training, someone who is truly could be considered to be a dedicated Buddhist based on the rules that they keep, the lifestyle that they keep. But the deeper one is a person who can truly be considered one dedicated to the Buddha's teaching, dedicated to the life, the spiritual life, because of their qualities. So Sutta Bhikkhu is what the Buddha is really talking about here in this verse. And so these two verses. And so the meaning behind the verses. The first verse is pretty simple. It just says that this isn't enough to be considered a bhikkhu. You can't be considered a bhikkhu just because you go for bhikkha. Likewise, you can't be considered a meditator just because you sit still. You can't be considered a Buddhist just because your parents were, or because you think you call yourself a Buddhist, or you wear this kind of clothes or that kind of clothes. This doesn't make you truly of any importance or any significance. And there's no reason to call you anything in particular, simply because of those reasons. And the focus, as Buddha says, is on visang dhammang again. So visang means something like bad or wrong or corrupt. You know? And so the usage of the word bhikkhu is actually really valuable and meaningful and instructive as a word to describe someone who has dedicated themselves to the Buddha's teaching, because of this idea of the alms round and the alms food. A person who dedicates themselves to alms is doing it for the purpose, in a Buddhist context, of freeing themselves from the seeking out of the objects of their desire. So seeking out food that they like, seeking out possessions and so on, seeking out some sort of monetary or wealth, gain of money or gain of wealth in order to satiate their desires. The idea behind the alms, the significance and the reason for using this word is because it exemplifies or it represents the letting go and the giving up of any kind of seeking out of worldly pursuits or worldly gains. Meaning, alms is the idea of accepting and being content with, or being content no matter what comes, whether one gets the objects of one's desire or the things that one needs or not. To be content with whatever comes or goes, or to be content and at peace no matter what comes and what goes. A person who goes on alms has to be content with whatever comes to them. And furthermore, they've given up any kind of seeking out or asking or begging or expecting from others. The alms round is not a begging round. It's a going out to receive gifts that are given out of confidence and faith and out of a desire for goodness. People who give alms are doing it because for themselves they consider it to be a spiritual act, the act of charity, something that benefits them, something that is valuable to them in a spiritual sense. So it's not taking and it's not asking, it's not seeking. It's receiving that which is truly given. And so there's a parallel with people who undertake intensive meditation practice, that you put yourself in a situation where all of these things are taken away from you. You don't have any decision on where you live, what you make use of, your dwelling. You don't have any say on the food that you eat. You come to the kitchen and it's a sort of alms round. You take what is there and you have no capacity to select or choose anything else. And it may seem somewhat, it's not really that significant, the literal act of taking food, but it exemplifies the sorts of qualities that we're trying to cultivate through the meditation practice of seeing through the attachment and the desire and the partiality and the need for things to be a specific way, the clinging and the craving that we have towards experiences, to in general have a sense of contentment and peace and clarity and objectivity, seeing things just as they are without any judgment. So these are the sorts of visangdhammang that the Buddha taught us to free ourselves from. And this is the idea behind the bhikkhu. We can all think of ourselves as bhikkhu whether we wear robes or not, if we, and to the extent that we free ourselves from craving and clinging and the need for things to be a certain way, and that we find, to the extent that we find peace and contentment and the ability to accept things as they are. It's quite a powerful ideal, or the idea of the alms round, or the alms receiver, the bhikkhu. But the second verse goes a little bit deeper and says something that's quite interesting. It says, someone who is a bhikkhu, it's because they have expelled good and evil. And so it raises this idea of the unique nature of not only becoming a monk or leaving the home life, but of undertaking the practice of Buddhist meditation. Buddhist meditation or the practice of satipatthana isn't like other types of meditation, as in for the purpose of finding pleasant states, blissful states, which is what most people, or the majority I would say, expect out of the practice of meditation. And Buddhism as well, the leaving behind of the home life to become a monk, to become a Buddhist meditator, all of the above, is unique in that it puts aside goodness to a certain extent. There's a certain type of goodness that it puts aside. A person who becomes a monk isn't able to muck around in the worldly sphere. We're not able to support we're not able to support worldly causes. We're not able to support good causes of any kind, political or non-governmental, social aid organizations or food banks. We're not able to engage in the sorts of goodness that passes for goodness in the worldly sphere. So I think the Buddha was probably touching upon something that was a bit of a flaw in this Brahmana's understanding of the spiritual life, and most likely he was engaged very much with his family and with his social, with society, in terms of trying to be spiritually, have a spiritually positive impact on the world, engaged with the world. But a person who leaves the world and becomes a monk or someone who comes to a meditation center to practice meditation isn't able to engage in those things. And it's a criticism that people will often level against both monks and meditators, that you're just navel-gazing, you're just selfish, you're spending time only on yourself. And so there's a difference of opinion, and there's a disharmony or a dissonance in our understanding of goodness. Because when the Buddha said you give up good and evil, he's talking about finding true, what is truly good and truly valuable, and that is the freedom from attachment, the freedom from needing things to be a certain way. It's letting go of the world, in a sense, and it's based on an understanding, a deeper understanding, that all of these things are impermanent, ephemeral, that any benefit that we might bring to society, anything we might do in the world, is eventually going to pass away and be forgotten like everything else. Nothing lasts forever in this world. Everything is impermanent, constantly changing, subject to dissolution. And so the idea is to go a little bit deeper than that, and to give up the idea of goodness for goodness sake, or trying to make the world a better place, or that sort of thing, trying to have some material or worldly goal of making the world some kind of paradise or some kind of utopia. The idea of giving up goodness, giving up evil, means giving up the need for things to be a certain way. It relates to our freedom from attachment. So it's not that a Buddhist doesn't engage in practicing goodness, and there is a very important difference between goodness and evil. A Buddhist does engage in the practice of goodness. As I've talked about, the Buddha was highly appreciative and encouraging his followers to constantly cultivate the practice of goodness, because of the value that it has for purifying our minds, because of the value it has in guiding us towards this deeper understanding, the clear understanding of things objectively. It helps free us from our desires, it helps free us from our aversion. When we're kind to others, when we're charitable, this is valuable. This is valuable as a practice to lead us to freedom from greed. When we're kind and generous, when we're thoughtful and compassionate, helping free us from greed, free us from anger, and helping give us a sense of strength of mind, confidence of mind that allows us to see clearly and free us from delusion. These are very valuable things, just not valuable in and of themselves, not valuable as goals, not something that we should internalize. So the Buddha said, a person has expelled good and evil. So no matter how much good you perform, in the end, that goodness is not what's important. What's important is the results of your practice and the clarity of mind that in the end frees you from any need for things to be a certain way, any attachment to even good deeds. And so an enlightened being will still do things to support others, help others. We saw that the Buddha continued to teach, and we see that enlightened beings are generous and kind and compassionate and have all sorts of good qualities. They even continue to practice meditation. But none of it they cling to. None of it is of any significance to them. They do it simply as a matter of course, because it's the proper, the right thing to do, or it's the thing that is done by those who have clarity of mind. It's the obvious action to perform at any given moment, that when someone needs your support, you give it without any desire to make things better or in any way desire for a future outcome. You simply do it as a matter of course because it's the right thing to do. So the lessons that we can draw from all of this is related to our practice of mindfulness. Our practice of mindfulness is to be able to see things more and more clearly, to see the objects of our desire as not worth desiring, to see the objects of our aversion as not being worth our aversion, to see things clearly, to see beyond the reactions to our experiences that lead us to suffering, to see that when we get angry about things, that's painful. Greed leads us to suffering through dissatisfaction, through disappointment, through change, through loss. And the idea behind the bhikkhu is again this renunciation that we take as a way of life. First of all, for those who have undertaken the practice of the monastic life, those who have officially undertaken and gone through the ordination process, and for those who have undertaken the practice of the Buddha's teaching on mindfulness, to see things clearly as they are, to truly renounce any kind of seeking out and to let the world bring what it may. The idea of the bhikkhu is to accept. When one accepts alms, this is a symbol of what it means to be enlightened. When one is enlightened, one is no longer seeking out things to be this way or that way, no longer has any attachment to results, is no longer caught up in worldly affairs, no longer caught up in the vicissitudes of life, delighting when things are a certain way and lamenting when things are not as they wish they were. It's a good way to think of what it means to be a Buddhist meditator, the bhikkhu, the one who has given up partiality, given up preference, and takes the world as it comes. When pleasure comes, they take the pleasure. When pain comes, they take the pain. Just as when a monk gets food, they accept the food. When a bhikkhu doesn't get food, they accept whatever they have, and they, as the Buddha said, they dwell feeding on rapture, feeding on the peace that comes from contentment, that comes from independence, a lack of depending on things to be a certain way. Certainly a reminder to us to not get attached to more superficial things like I am a monk, I am a meditator, I am a Buddhist, and so on. To look deeper and to really focus on what's important, which of course is what we're doing through the practice of mindfulness. And it's a good way to think of our goal as being to be truly able to receive whatever comes without wishing for it to be different, or hoping or craving or clinging that things might stay or things might go or things might be a certain way. So the bhikkhu is a good symbol, a good object of appreciation for all of us, something for us to aspire to, both in terms of the official ordination for those who can undertake it, but more importantly as qualities of mind that free us from our attachment to things being a certain way or needing for things to be a certain way. So that's the Dhammapada for today. Thank you for listening.